I don't think Athena has ever been more podcast relevant than the movie we are talking about today. We are actually talking about a movie that primary character is a black cat. Can you, your representation is finally here. We've never really been a, like, we talk a little bit about representation in this podcast, but not a ton. But today, Athena herself is represented on screen, and she will be joining us on mic to talk about how she feels about this representation.
You want me to go pick her up?
A cat as a metaphor for loneliness and isolation. How do you feel about that being an Oscar-winning representation for you, Athena?
Star Wars. Transformers. Godzilla. Whatever else. Rebels, robots, and etc.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
What if I just put her on the table?
I mean, it's her house as much as it is anyone's. It's Starformers Mission Night! Welcome to Rebels and Robots and... What did, I can never remember what we landed on for the R word for animation. What, at one point it was rotoscoping, but I feel like we had come up with a better one. Man, I forgot to write it down. Man, I can't remember. Rotoscoping is not great. It's fine, but like...
Rebels and Robots and Reanimation.
I thought about that. Rendering. That's what it was. Rendering. Oh. What do you think? What do you like better? Rendering or rotoscope? Or do you think there's a better option out there?
I guess rendering is okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a great one. Like, I'm not saying these are... Rule of thirds, that's... Yeah, whatever. Rigging is, like, good, but it's not specific. Like, it's too broad.
It makes it sound like we're on a boat.
Yeah, exactly. It applies to too many other... The thing with resolution, like, rendering is almost too close. Run cycle.
She hung up here for a while.
She was. That is true. Remake. Rotoscoping. I guess rotoscoping is kind of the best one. Rendering is nice and specific to animation, I think. I like it. Okay. It's Starformers Illumination Night. Welcome to Rebels and Robots and Rendering, episode 75. I'm Cameron.
I'm Rachel.
And this is our... supposedly bi-weekly chat, but we're going to be throwing that title in the blender this last month and the upcoming
blender
month.
What a good
that's a good
wow,
that's relevant, especially to the movie we're talking about today.
Today we're putting
this
Cameron
is our weekly chat about Star Wars and
Transformers
and animation and whatever else we both like
and
to talk about.
Render farms.
Render. Ooh. This week we are talking about the Oscar-winning animated film Flow. It just won the 2025 Oscar for Best Animated Feature, and that's why we're talking about it. It was very relevant at the time when we watched it, but now it's been a month since the Oscars. But, you know, we got nothing else. This is this could have been a podcast. I mean, dang it.
This could have been a podcast season,
but here we are. It's been... Now, if you're looking at the release date of the episodes, I don't know if you know this yet or Rachel, but we recorded a month ago, but I accidentally forgot to hit publish on the last episode.
I did actually see that you posted it yesterday, and I went,
So it occurred to me that I had not posted on social, so I went to post it on social, and then I couldn't find the episode, so I went into the RSS editing side and realized it was there, it was uploaded, it was ready to go. I just had failed to hit the publish button.
Yeah, I saw it.
Clearly, our fans don't care enough because no one told me.
I did look the other day and I was like, man, I guess I'm up to date on all the episodes. That's wrong.
So, according to the publication date of our episode, it's only been a few days since we last released episode, but it's actually been a month. So it's good to be back. A lot of news. So before we talk about the movie, we'll jump into news. How many pieces of news do you have this week, Rachel?
I have three. One which we already talked about, but this is the most important news.
She's got a poster in hand. Oh, it's Godzilla Minus One.
It's a movie poster. It's a full size.
You know, I don't think I've ever fully realized that's a G. I thought it was just like a brushstroke. I thought it was maybe a... Oh. Okay, here's the thing. In the Japanese posters, is it a G or is it a different shape?
I'm pretty sure it's always been a G.
Huh. See, I think I just assumed it was a Japanese character, and so I just didn't think that hard about it. Well, because it's... Look, the top of the G is very skinny. It also kind of looks like Godzilla. It's
painted like with like a paintbrush.
Yes. So I thought it was just a brush stroke.
Real G's know it was a G.
Yeah, uh-huh. Very nice. Cool poster. Where are you going to put it?
In my office.
At work or here? What? You got...
No, it's going to... In my office here. The funny thing is because the spot I would like to have it is my direct background for all of my classes and any meetings I'm in. So... Anyone behind me just could be like, Godzilla Minus One.
My first bit is not... Oh, also, forgot to say, this is news, woos, and boos. Godzilla poster definitely gets a woo.
Woo!
Though it's not really news, but, you know, it's whatever.
Anything Godzilla Minus One is a woo.
That's true. Unless it is that, like, Warner Brothers has decided to take it off the internet for tax cuts. That would be a boo.
Well, fun fact. I own it on DVD, so...
Physical media, baby! Last episode, which, like I said, has been a month now, you kept mentioning that it was International Women's Month. Like, specifically when we were talking about how, man, this is going to take us up... Both... It's been so long since we watched this, and also so long since we podcast about it, so long since I thought about it. Last episode, we talked about the stop-motion... Transformers 1 thing on YouTube. The Alita figure was really terrible, yeah. So you kept saying that it was anti-women. How dare they in International Women's Month. Good joke. You kept saying that, except for then later on, I mentioned how I was doing a shoot at an event for International Women's Day, and you said you did not know that it was International Women's Day. Which I thought was very funny, that you had spent most of the episode mentioning that it was International Women's Month. But you did not know that it was International Women's Day. I didn't realize
it was like a day-specific
duel. Well, that's anti-woman, Rachel. How
dare I'm sorry,
you?
I've been misinformed by the patriarchy, actually.
Oh, very feminist of you to turn it around on the patriarchy.
You're welcome. No one told me that. Do you know who was responsible for that? For telling me that? The men in my life. They dropped the ball.
I think it was Athena's fault. Athena, you're supposed to
keep... know she is thoroughly anti-woman.
It's a producer's job. Yeah. Human woman. Yeah. She hates women specifically.
Especially men, too.
Do you have other news?
Well.
There's one big piece of news related to the podcast.
That's really kind of it. That's all I got.
Yeah, okay.
Outside of, if you haven't seen the episode release schedule for Andor, it's 4 weeks straight.
Yes.
They're throwing out 12 episodes in a whole... month.
Well, if you're gonna bring it up, then this is a good time. Right before we started podcasting, we spent like 20 minutes, and I did, and then Rachel was on her phone.
Cameron was on his laptop.
I was figuring out the schedule. Okay, so we figured it out. We originally...
What am I supposed to do? Find new dates for us?
We had, back before they announced Andor's release schedule, and we knew Jurassic World... Preborn, Reborn, Rebirth.
Ew. Duh. It makes it sound like you know those
T-bone.
Like you know those like reborn babies.
Jurassic World T-bone.
That people have, like those baby dolls that are like super realistic. That, but it's like a baby velociraptor.
Jurassic Park Reborn because they all have found Jesus. That's the name of the movie. That's the full title.
What a good topic as we go into Resurrection Sunday in just
that's
a few weeks.
That's true.
Hallelujah.
I've gotten way off topic. That's my fault. Going into that, we had set up a schedule for us to be able to cover the Jurassic Park movies going up to it. But then once they announced that they were releasing 3 episodes of Andor every week for a month... rather than releasing 1 episode a week like a normal human television show does, or releasing just the whole schedule, seeing the season at once like Netflix does normally, it really threw off our schedule because being able to watch 3 episodes and try to podcast every week, that just did not work with our usual
schedule. And while I'm pursuing my higher education.
Yes, exactly. Rachel's at school trying to make her life better for herself and her family. You better appreciate it,
for
Athena.
For those of you that can't see, which is everyone listening to this aside from us, Cameron gestured to Athena.
To the chomping baby over there.
Yeah, she's back at it. Look how odd she looks. Look at her legs.
Oh, just, man, just really, this is she's, a hostile work environment.
Did you see her square up? She's gripping that carpet.
All this to say, before the podcast today, we finally figured out our schedule. I think it's going to work. So we will be covering all three episodes the day after they drop. So April 22nd is when the first three episodes come out. So on April 23rd, we will cover the first three episodes. Then on April 30th, May 7th, and May 14th. So it'll be a month straight. Get ready, listeners. Month of Andor.
Straight of Andor. Month door.
It's going to be month door.
Oh, wait, no. Mon month door.
That's not bad.
There we go.
And then after that, we'll jump right into Jurassic Park. We'll do Jurassic Park on January 21st, May 21st. And then on June 4th, we will do Jurassic Park 2 and 3.
And you have homework for that. You got to read the book.
You got to read the book. I've got it. Rachel has... lent me her copy of the Jurassic Park novel. Really look forward. I've tried to read it before. Michael Crichton, one of my favorite authors. Look forward to it. Jurassic Park 2 and 3.
I didn't realize Michael Crichton was one of your favorite authors.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, science fiction. We've never talked about this.
I didn't know you read books.
Not as much these days, but like in high school.
Oh, my goodness.
And in college.
Presence of an educated man.
I would say so, yeah. June 18th, Jurassic World. July 2nd, Jurassic World 2 and 3. And then July 9th, Jurassic Park T-Bone. So it's a fast, tight schedule. We're going to be doing a lot. We will be earning the rest that we've had this last couple months.
I think one thing, spoilers, if you haven't read the book, do it now, because I will at least be talking about the biggest differences between the book and the movie.
Yes, looking forward to it. In other news, Monarch Season 2 wrapped... filming.
Oh.
I am astonished that this is reality. I can't believe
we're in the worst timeline, Cameron.
Now, if this was a Warner Brothers property, I would not be so certain that we were going to be getting, because nothing is certain about Warner Brothers. Now, but on the other hand, talking about animation, I don't know if we ever talked about this. About a year or two ago, I think it was a year ago, they formally announced it. Warner Brothers had fully produced a Looney Tunes movie, like a live action CGI or animation hybrid, and just totally scrapped it. Like the movie was shot probably very close, if not fully finished, and it looked like we would never get it. They've actually sold the film rights to another studio, and we are going to be getting that movie. So no one's ever truly gone. That being said, though, Warner Brothers does erase a lot of things. Apple, who produces Monarch, not so prone to doing that, as far as I can tell. So
maybe they should start.
As far as anything can be guaranteed these days, Monarch Season 2 is on its way.
We're gonna have to make a new free trial email. I'm not paying for that.
Oh, geez. In totally unrelated news, Apple Plus is reportedly losing more than $1 billion a year as the company is spending $4.5 billion on content annually.
Holy cow.
Yeah, that isn't related at all to the fact that they've made a Monarch Season 2.
Oh, do you know what else we're going to have to talk about? I forgot suspense. The date. On our third round of Andor.
Yeah. Oh, well... The next piece of news. Yes. So, as might become annual tradition, it's already kind of a tradition this year, Star Wars just dropping stuff on us with no lead up whatsoever.
They're like...
totally jacking up our calendar.
They're like, here you animals, and they just throw something at us on Disney Plus.
We are getting a third season of Tales of the Blank from Star Wars. This time it is... I'll let you do the news on this one.
It's Tales of the Underworld, and it's going to be focusing on Asajj Ventress, either probably post-Bad Batch Season 3, or maybe right before Bad Batch Season 3.
Somewhere in that period it's where she's a good guy and has a terrible haircut.
You know what? that style just doesn't translate haircuts very well.
Nope. Awful.
And the other half is about Cad Bane. And from what I have heard, it's an origin story. Yeah,
so it's young Cad Bane, pre... I think none of us really realized it until we looked
apparatus.
Him up. He doesn't have the like the things in his neck. Yeah.
You're like, why does he look bald?
Yeah, it is... That is the storyline of the two I'm definitely most interested in. Because I'm not a huge Cad Bane guy, but like I'm curious to see what made this guy. Like,
it's something different.
Sure, absolutely. It's not like just more of him being a bounty hunter. It's like, okay, what results in this guy being the way he is? An origin story, obviously. Like, more Asajj Ventress. I'm not... Like, it can be good. I'm not saying it's inherently out. But also, on the other hand, they did the same thing for... Morgan Elsbeth last year with Tales of the Empire, but that was only like one of the three episodes was origin, and the other two were kind of just, they were technically origins, but they were more just more adventures with her. I don't know. I just think Cad Bane is probably a more compelling character than Morgan Elsbeth, but we'll have to wait and see. So far for me, Tales of the Blank have just been fine.
Yeah, they're okay.
Been whatever. I'll watch them. We can probably just save it to cover after Jurassic Park, honestly.
It's kind of one of those things where we watch them and we're kind of like, okay.
Yeah.
Like,
I agree.
I wouldn't say it's...
I don't think we need a rush to cover it.
No, it's not really, I don't think... I don't want to say, like, strongest, but for us, they've just had a continuous, all right, kind of reaction. Like, nothing insane... In our opinions, I know some people really enjoy it, which is cool. It's just kind of like, all right.
Like, I think what was most enjoyable was Tales of the Jedi because there was a general theme to them because it was kind of about lineage. Even though they were, it was technically...
Dooku was a strong start.
Yeah, it was Dooku and it was Ahsoka. And while none of the individual episodes were that compelling, we did get to see... Dooku and Qui-Gon together, which we've never seen before, not in like main media
young
at least.
Qui-Gon.
And it did like draw the comparison of like, yeah, it goes Palpatine, Dooku, well, at least as Jedi, Dooku, Qui-Gon, Obi-Wan, Anakin, Ahsoka. And then with the Ahsoka show, you then add Sabine to it. Mm-hmm. That's a fascinating lineage of Jedi. And that's not really something that's talked about a ton.
Jedi,
and you also throw
so
Obi-Wan in there as well. So I thought that general concept of like, we're going to fill in some of the gaps here and make a point of like, in the drawing parallels between Ahsoka and Dooku, how they both were Jedi and they left the Jedi Order. But when Dooku left the Jedi Order, he became corrupted by the dark side, and Ahsoka became still a warrior for the good. Those are cool comparisons.
The white.
Exactly. There wasn't much of a point to the two characters with... but you know what? I guess each of these three, the two characters are kind of like characters that are on the fringes, who one goes good, one goes bad. Morgan Elsbeth and that was the other part that I liked about Tales of the Empire was that we do get to see the eventual redemption of Barriss. Was that the Jedi's name?
Yeah.
Like, that wasn't, like, super compelling, but it was cool, like, in contrast to Morgan Elsbeth.
Yeah.
To see that Barriss became a Inquisitor, which was also a cool thing to see, is how that process kind of worked.
That was pretty interesting.
And then for her to come around at the end and also ended up helping Force-sensitive people. So, like, that wasn't generally... a worthwhile story to tell that we would not have gotten otherwise. So I guess what I'm saying is there are very low highs and very high lows to this series.
Yeah.
Like it oscillates in a very thin area in the middle where it doesn't go too bad, but also doesn't get super great. But the high points are notable. And I guess they're better existing than not existing. So you can expect that comes out on May 4th, but you can expect it from us on July 23rd is when we'll finally get around to it. And I have one last note. If do you have any other news?
Nah. My only note for the Tales of the Underworld trailer was there is a trailer.
Yes, pretty much. So at some point in the last few episodes, we, for some reason, we're talking about Moana 2. And you complained about the fact that in Moana 1, Tamora Morrison, our dude, was the voice of Moana's dad, but did not get to sing, even though he is a singer. Do you remember this?
Yes, you don't have to remind me that Lin-Manuel Miranda snubbed.
I doubt he may have had an influence on it. I doubt it.
He did. He wrote the music.
Yeah, but he don't think he had influence on who that got cast as the singing voice for the dad.
Both of the singing voices for the parents in Moana were original listeners in the Hamilton musical.
Well, that then maybe he did. Interesting. Well, regardless of whose responsibility it was, I did, over my vacation, which is why it's been a month since we podcasted, get to watch Moana 2, not on purpose, but it did result in me learning that Tamora does get to do the singing voice. So, okay. Redemption there.
Come on, I guess I'll watch it.
I thought that was pretty cool. I could definitely tell the difference, too. So that's fun. I hope they paid him very well. That man deserves it, especially after Disney screwed him over on Book of Boba Fett. I hope that they paid it well for Moana 2.
That's my man.
Flow. 2024 animated film out of
Latvia.
Animated in Blender. Do you want to kind of explain Blender for us real quick?
Yeah. So, I don't know how correct this is now, but for animation, industry standard for the longest time was a program called Maya. Maya's mm-hmm. very expensive 3D animation and modeling. Program, like at the time that I was in my undergrad, it's without an educational discount. You get like a couple years free as a student, but without that, it was like $1,000 a year.
Wow,
it's probably more now.
Sure.
Because for some reason software costs inflate. but Blender is another 3D modeling and animation software, and it's free. Mm-hmm. Now, if you practice enough, you can do some really amazing things in Blender that you can basically do the same in Maya. It's kind of like a skill issue thing, but it has a lot of the same features, maybe not exact, but you can get very similar results, probably just with more work. So Blender, it's free.
Yes.
That's the biggest thing. It is free.
And so it's a big deal that a feature-length animated film that just won Best mm-hmm. Picture was animated on this software.
And beat out Inside Out. It beat out Disney and DreamWorks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some big in a year of pretty big animated releases, it's...
Big name.
It was probably the smallest name. I mean, mm-hmm. it also beat Netflix's newest Wallace and Gromit.
It was made by like four guys.
Oh, yeah.
Even more than that.
It did, regardless of like, I mean, it was definitely a smaller team than a major animation studio.
And it 40 to 50, but like total production, but the core mm-hmm. team was 4 to 5 people.
It took them 5.5 years
mm-hmm.
to make it. And it is on HBO Max, so that's where you can watch it now. And it was the first Latvian film to ever be, I think, even nominated for an Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
It got nominated. It won Best Animated Picture, but it was also nominated for just Best International Movie,
mm-hmm.
which is crazy because that goes beyond it being addressed as a good animated film. That's just kind of being addressed as a good film.
Yeah.
Period. And also won the Golden Globe for Best Animated, which is really cool.
It's the most viewed film in Latvian theater's history.
Oh, wow. That's fascinating. Yeah, so that's why we chosen to talk about it. It's big in the world of animation right now. It is very simple narratively, zero dialogue, which is kind of a spoiler in the sense of like you go in expecting there to be dialogue and it mm-hmm. never happens. No dialogue movie. It's pretty much just about this cat and a collection of other animals who find themselves in a flooded world where there's remnants of human society, but there are no humans.
It's like very recent post-apocalyptic.
Something has happened. There's an implication, I feel, and we can talk about it later, that something spiritual has happened.
Mm-hmm.
But it also could very well be a natural disaster. The movie kind of implies that there's been a series of fluctuating floods. So the mm-hmm. movie is based around a flood. There's an initial sudden flood in like the second scene of the movie. and then the waters just continue to slowly rise, which result in a collection of animals, a cat, a dog, a lemur, a capybara, and a bird. What kind of bird was it again? Do you remember? I have it written down here somewhere. I thought this bird was actually...
It was a secretary bird.
Secretary bird. Look it up. They're fascinating looking birds. I totally thought this was a fictional bird. Because there's also a whale involved in the story that looks very...
Not whale.
Fanciful. I actually thought it was a dragon at first because it has like a lot of spindly things coming off its face. But so these five animals, cat, dog, lemur, capybara, cat, dog, bird, capybara, lemur. Yeah, these five animals end up in a boat together, and they're pretty sentient, these animals. They're smarter than definitely like normal animals would be in real life, but they don't talk. They're still mostly... You know, they don't stand on hind legs. They're not talking at all. Mm-hmm. And how would you describe this animation style?
So it's definitely stylized, but it's not too cartoony.
Yeah, like, it's kind of right in the middle.
It's fairly, like, I would say realistic, but it's almost painterly in a way.
Yeah, the proportions, like the way the characters are designed, is realistic. Mm-hmm. They don't have like crazy proportions. Mm-hmm. Like their profiles, their silhouettes are realistic. It's more the lighting and texture, and I would say the exact quality. It seems like they've made a stylistic decision to lessen the quality.
It's like storybook.
Yeah, and in case we didn't make it clear, this is 3D animated. I think in case that wasn't clear. It, to me, it almost resembles a video game cutscene of like the late PS2/Xbox, early Xbox 360.
There's
PS3
like a lot
era.
Of bloom.
Yeah, a lot of lighting bloom. But the lighting, I wish I knew the terminology for this. Like in real life, shadows are very complex. Like they gradient. They go from dark to light very gradually to the point you can't actually find the normally in like light in most lighting situations the exact edge of a shadow is not a defined point.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if you ever played video games, especially on PC, you can control lighting quality and shadow quality. This has very much like lower lighting quality than like a Toy Story 4. Like modern CGI movies have incredible lighting that looks very realistic.
It definitely feels like there's probably just like one light source in the globe of the scene.
That's interesting. Okay.
And so it may not move around a whole lot. There's just not a lot of dynamic shadowing, but that's not a negative, I don't think.
Yeah, oh no, I think it's a stylistic choice. Yeah. I mean, one of the great things about film...
It's almost a little like abstract.
Like, honestly, why majority of great films in this world are not the highest grossing films. I mean, we can contrast this movie with Netflix's over $300 million film they released last month called The Electric State that no one's watching. Like, no one's interested, and everything I've heard about it is like, yeah, it looks great, but there's no life to it.
It's like cel-shaded. Cel-shading.
Which one is?
Flow.
Oh, yeah, I think to some degree, yeah. I think my point is what makes most films great and art great in general is working around and working with and through your constraints. So, obviously, this is a lower budget film in the world of filmmaking, the world of animation, the world of Western animation. And they've chosen to go in a lower resolution per se, but lower fidelity style. One, because it's easier to animate, easier to render, but also it looks cool. It gives this particular style that's it's not so realistic that you have to deal with Uncanny Valley, but it's also not so cartoony that you can't relate to it. It doesn't, because there's a lot, I think what I'm thinking now is like, you do need a certain level of realism for this movie to work. Like, this movie would not necessarily work as well as if it was 2D animated, because there's a lot of, like, suspense. Like, what's going to happen to the characters is really important. So if it was 2D animated, I think you wouldn't take it as seriously. But because it's 3D animated, there's a certain weight and gravity to it. Would you agree with that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
And it is really just a sequence of perilous events intercut with like light moments where you get, you know, I think ultimately the director of the movie talked about this is a movie about learning to work together, learning to like we're all in the same boat, end quote. The cat is seen to be very elusive, very aloof, I mean. He lives on his own. He lives in a house by himself. Doesn't have any other people. He's scared of the dogs that he meets at first. Doesn't really trust the other animals at first. And these animals have to learn to work together to survive. Mm-hmm. And the movie has a phenomenal finale that we'll talk about a little bit later that kind of caps off that point. I had a note here from a quote from the director. Let me see if I can find it. I thought that was an interesting thing that the director said. I'm trying to find it. To take a quick step back to we were talking about the Oscars, this is the third non-English animated film to win the best animated one. The first one was Spirited Away, one of the best animated films mm-hmm. ever made, best movies made, period, probably. Mm-hmm. And also The Boy and the Heron, So it's crazy that 2 years in a row, they've only had one before. And also, Spirited Away may have been the first animated Oscar, period. Or maybe, I think Shrek won the year before that, maybe. Crazy. I don't know. I'd have to look at the years. Crazy. It's very early. And what I'm saying is the category of Best Animated Picture did not come about until the early 2000s. So it's not a very old category. But it is crazy that there was only one non-English one before, and then it wins it twice in a row. And are both very animal heavy.
Which, what a time to be alive.
Yeah, really. So the director just said he wanted to capture what it feels like to have to rely on others. And that's why he chose the cat as the main character. Why do you think the movie's called Flow? I don't know if that's a very obvious question, but it's not, there's no words. It's not like the cat's name is Flow. What would be your interpretation?
Maybe it's just called Go With the Flow is a little too worry. So I think they're like, let's just call it Flow.
Now I'm going to actually look up and see if that's a translation thing. I want to see what this word from Latvian.
Latvian.
Translates. Means stream.
Okay.
Is well, at least what Google Translate says. Obviously, I don't speak Latvian, so I can't. Stream, flow, or tidal current. I do wonder, it is possible there's a little bit more of a cultural, that word might relate to something differently in Latvian culture. I don't know.
I don't know. It could have been a thing where they're like, well, why don't we name this? I've had that before. What's the title of your project? And you got to change it from Final Four or,
sure.
Because you've had to render it four different times. What do we call it?
So, other things to talk about. Favorite character, the capybara, man. That capybara is so good. I mean, as soon as a capybara shows up, it's exciting. And you know the personality the capybara mm-hmm. has in nature. He,
big fan of the cat myself.
He's kind of simultaneously chill with everyone in the boat, but he also kind of puts up into problems. He's bigger than everyone else.
An authority.
But also... he's a problem solver, at least a relational problem solver. The lemur is very self-obsessed, is a treasure collector, likes shiny things, but also finds this mirror, is obsessed with the mirror because he can see himself. And he's rolling around this glass ball that he finds, and it pisses off the bird.
It's a Japanese fishing net mm-hmm. float, by the way.
Yes.
Other cultures probably use it.
Sure.
But
the bird launches the glass ball out into the water, and it causes the lemur to freak out, and it causes a fight, and it causes them to wreck the boat, at least the mast into something. It causes a big problem. Mm-hmm. And it causes the cat to fall out of the boat, and the capybara just jumps out of the boat and goes and gets the glass ball. He's kind of both kind to everyone, but also is not bothered mm-hmm. by all of their personal hangups. The introduction of the bird is interesting to kind of explain the bird. The crew kind of, before they meet any birds directly, they land on a small island. They find a flock of these birds, and the birds are very clearly think of themselves as a higher
The cat has met the birds before.
Yeah, the bird, it was unclear exactly what the bird was doing, but I think later actions prove that the bird was trying to kill the cat.
That was a different bird. That was the main bird.
The bird that he encountered, not the bird that ends up in the boat.
Oh, okay.
The first, so he gets picked up by, he gets snatched out of the water by a the main bird. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But and, by an antagonistic secretary yes, bird.
Exactly. And it's unclear what that bird is doing. Is it saving him? Is he taking him to higher land? Is he going to eat him? And he ends up dropping him. So like at that point, you don't know what he's doing. But then later, those same birds attack the cat.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very clear they do want to kill him. One bird stands up to the main bird, gets his wing broken. All the birds leave this one bird behind. And that one bird now becomes kind of the leader. Because mm-hmm. even this lesser bird himself kind of still sees him as a little bit above these other animals. It's probably the closest thing we have to a human in the movie because he kind of sees himself separated from the animals. He's the one who's able to like steer the boat. At some point, almost all the animals steer the boat, which is really great. But the bird is the one who takes it upon himself. So that's his personality. That causes tension with the dog, who's just an idiot. He's a dog.
He's a golden retriever.
But the relationship between the dog and the cat is interesting because the dogs, first time we see, there's a group of dogs, they chase the cat, but then that dog gets separated from his pack and he kind of just follows the cat around. I'm just kind of going all over the place just because there's not much of a plot.
One thing that is continuously brought back in each kind of establishing shot, though, is these like very tall stone pillars.
Yes, they're off in the distance at first.
And the seems to be the water and the boat and the current is bringing the boat to this area.
Yes.
So you see That's true. You see it.
You know, I never thought about that. I never thought, like, I kind of just took it for granted that that was just the natural flow of water. But given an event that we could talk about in a moment that happens on the rocks, it is possible that the rocks were actually drawing sentient creatures, or at least the bird, to it. I never considered that. There's a lot, this movie is very open to interpretation because it is not making a lot of things overt. And there are a few elements that are incredibly vague. You can really fill a lot of gaps in this movie with kind of your own interpretation. This movie can be as random or as meaningful as you kind of want it to be. So I love the capybara. You said you love the cat. Any particular moments with the cat that you enjoyed?
Cat. I'm just biased.
Yeah.
It made me sad, though, because if that ever happened, like we'll talk about this. If we all essentially get raptured. I was going to point behind me because she's there. She's not there anymore. She absolutely does not have the ability to survive like that. Athena. That's who I'm referencing.
No, not at all.
It makes me sad. I mean, it just makes me sad because it's like all these domesticated animals probably at some point had someone taking care of them.
You would assume it's kind of everything, all the human stuff. It's hard to tell because we only see one human house pre-flood. Mm-hmm. And the house is in good condition.
Well, pre that flood, and it still has wood carvings.
Yes.
So that...
It looks like very recently abandoned. Everything else we see after that is pretty much ruins, but it's hard to know if it's ruins because of the flood or because it's been abandoned for a long time. So again, there's a lot we don't know. It's also hard to know if this is a more primitive part of the world or if this is in the past, because everything we see, we don't see any technology. We don't ever witness a car or anything that runs on electricity, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's in the past. It's impossible to know, really, ultimately.
Yeah.
I had a part I liked with the cat. I love that the cat ends up catching fish for everyone on the boat. It's a good moment. It is then sad though that they end up picking up the other pack of dogs and they eat all the other fish.
Yeah.
But there's a part where I think it's the lemur is playing with the mirror and it causes a reflection on the boat and the cat
starts playing for it.
It's just like the cat has not done a bunch of like household cat stuff up till that point. He's mostly just been kind of a wild animal, but for him to do that was very cute. So I think the final two things to talk about will be the big weird moment that's almost inexplicable, and then the ending. Is there anything prior to those moments that you want to talk about?
Not really. Aside from the fact that this guy has flood PTSD.
Yeah, he has a dream about it.
I mean, that's valid.
Sure.
that's fair, I think, if you ask me.
Oh, another great moment that kind of explains the capybara as a character is, so they find the lemur on this ruined house that's slowly flooding. And the lemur has just so much treasure in here. Mm-hmm. He's trying to pack it all up, and he's not going to be able to. So the capybara just grabs his basket and just pulls it onto mm-hmm. the boat, forcing the lemur to come with him. It's just such a great little character
you
moment.
You can't take it with you, Cameron.
Exactly.
You can't take it with you.
And okay, so we finally end up on the big, very tall bits of mountainous rock. Like, they're not mm-hmm. mountains in the sense of like the Rocky Mountains. These are like tall,
they're spires.
Pillars. Exactly. Yes. And I call it God's middle finger.
Well, and the reason they end up on it is because, so the current has been taking the boat this way, and the waters get really choppy.
Yes.
The rudder actually breaks. And the bird, his wing has healed enough that he has left, and he just flies away. Mm-hmm. There are buildings built into these stone spires, but no humans.
Yeah.
And so the bird flies away, and then the waves get rough enough that it knocks the cat out. Mm-hmm. And so he swims looking for the bird, and he swims to the same area, to the main pillar, I believe, and it's just thousands of steps up to the very top.
And so, yeah, so the cat finds the bird at the top, and then the water starts, like, drips of water start slowly floating up, and then there's, like, if I remember correctly, a beam of light, and then both the cat and the birds start floating upward until the bird is like ascended into the clouds and the cat is left behind. Now that's putting it very simply. It's very clearly a religious
mm-hmm.
supernatural very encounter,
rapture.
Which comes out of nowhere. There's been like very little to zero setup for this moment.
Mm-hmm.
It is very shocking. I really was almost disappointed the movie did not continue in this direction. Like, the scene ends, nothing like this is ever referenced. I mean, obviously the characters don't talk to each other, nothing can be. This is a one-of-a-kind scene within this movie. I really thought the cat and the bird were going to transcend together, and we were going to go. The movie was going to take a sharp left in the crazy town. And that, for me, would have really explained why this film won the Oscar. Because, well, I think this is a decent film. Up to this point, I was a little underwhelmed. I like this movie. I think anytime you decide to go, totally speechless, I think that's a huge challenge to make people even watch the movie to begin with. I respect it. Also, just to quickly just help bring the viewer into what this looks like, it's not a beam of light. It is like a tunnel or a vortex going up that kind of looks like a mix between water and aurora borealis surrounding mm-hmm. them and specks of light. The bird fully transcends into a very bright light at the top while the cat is lowered back down. And man, do you have a take on this, Rachel? Because this is bizarre.
I don't. It was just kind of those moments we were watching, we're like, oh, this is happening. Okay. And it's just odd. It's yeah. just kind of like, okay, this is happening.
It's certainly visually the best moment in the movie for mm-hmm. me. Like, well, in a movie it's very well animated, I appreciated that the movie got a little weird
mm-hmm.
in use of color, use of, you know, physics, all that. It was a great scene. It just is very bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the closest I can come from it literally within the plot is it would seem as though this is what happened to the humans.
Yeah, it definitely seems that the humans went to the top.
Oh, also,
astral ascended somewhere else.
Yeah, the top where they are, the floor, the ground where they are on top of this mountain, the spire has got carvings in it.
Mm-hmm.
So humans have it's very. It looks almost like Mayan, like a lot of like right angles, but like squiggly, not squiggly, mm-hmm. like squiggly in the sense that they go back and forth, but they're not round; they're square. So it does seem as though humans have made, or something that can carve, you presume humans, have made this a religious monument. Whether the flood is a part of human history. Most cultures and religions have a great flood.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously in our culture, the big one is from the Bible, which was a judgment upon the earth. So it is possible the implication here is that a religious deity or force...
An innocent sacrifice was needed to lower the water?
Oh, I hadn't considered that. So the water does begin to lower after this.
Yeah.
I had not considered the relationship between those two things.
Oh, that's what I immediately thought. Interesting.
So that's why I wanted to hear your take, because I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
So... Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
So after... it's kind of sad because the cat just kind of sits there waiting for the bird to come back, and he doesn't. Sad. So he comes back down, and he gets back down to the base of the water, and the boat is so far away.
Uh-huh.
The boat has continued on with all his friends. And so he starts swimming, and he happens to encounter the floating glass ball, and he's able to sit on it. And I was like, I don't want to watch this cat drown again. And hope seems to be lost when suddenly there's like a shaking. And you don't really understand what's happening until suddenly tree branches poke up next to him. So the water is lowering. My first thought was that it was like a sacrifice to whatever deity or whatever the sacrifice of the bird was necessary to lower the water.
Interesting.
That was my first thought, which was also made me, because it seems, because there had been multiple, it's implied there have been floods before. Because
see
we see
a boat in the
tree. Yeah. It's been implied, and obviously something happened to the humans. So it feels like a situation where it's like, have there been each time is there a flood? Does someone got to go up to take the elevator up into space? I don't know, but that was my first assumption.
Yeah. And so the question for me, cause what we see is when all the flock of birds halfway through the movie take off and leave the main bird behind, if I remember correctly, they go in the direction of the spires.
Mm-hmm.
One could conclude that this is where all the birds went, because this is the highest ground. We don't see any other birds the rest of the movie. At the very least, this particular species of bird that have this sort of like religious imagery to them.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible this is where they went, that all of them sacrificed themselves and... it required this last bird for the sacrifice / transcendence to be complete. Yeah, I mean, there's so little information that you can really just fill in your own gaps. Yeah, because also, this shot is really important. When after the main bird has been fully left behind, this bird, you know, has made...
Mm-hmm.
He put himself out there for the cat. The bird is just kind of silently and independently standing on top of a hill looking at the spires, and the cat goes over and joins him, and in the distance, so the cat is, after being left behind, the bird is looking at the spires. So there's a lot of implications here, I would say, that's where the birds went, that the bird always knew that this is where he needed to go. And then, I mean, I guess that raises the question of, is possible it was not necessarily the waters drawing the boat to the spire, but the bird was making an intentional choice to go there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, again, all open for interpretation. It is very much about the experience. I mean, if it were not for this transcendence moment, the movie would not require much interpretation.
No, not at all.
It would be very straightforward of it, just these animals in a boat surviving together. That's what the director said it's about. But what the heck does this scene mean for the... It really forces you to recontextualize everything up to this point about what the birds are, what the flood is. If you put it in the context of the biblical flood, it's a judgment on earth. And in... I mean, I guess I'm not kind of blanking here. Is there a specific moment in the Bible, in Genesis, that God brings the water back down?
Yes, because we're alive.
Well, I know that, like, is there a reason that he does? Like, is there something that motivates
it's
God?
It's after 40 days.
Yeah. So that's just a specific amount of time.
I actually have Genesis open.
It's not like it's something Moses does to recede the waters.
For 40 days, the flood waters rose.
Uh-huh.
The floodwaters covered the earth for 150 days.
Oh my gosh.
But everything aside from Noah and his family and the animals in the ark was wiped out. So 150 days. There's, but it covered everything. There weren't any pillars left uncovered.
Yeah. Sure.
It was a wind. He sent a wind. Sent a wind to blow across the earth, and the flood waters began to recede. I'm in Genesis 8 now. For anyone reading along with the Bible study. The rain stopped. The underground water stopped flowing, and it was exactly 5 months from the time the flood began. The boat came to rest in the mountains of Ararat, and then 2.5 months later, the waters continued to go down, and other mountain peaks became visible. After another 40 days, so this is like over 6 months at this point. He sent out the dove. He released a raven, and a dove. No dry ground yet. And then after another 7 days, he released the dove again. So there isn't really a thing outside of Genesis 8:1 says, but God remembered Noah and all the wild animals and livestock with him in the boat. He sent a wind. So nothing was done. Nothing was earned per se, aside from God's grace. And that's not really earned. I saw someone on Reddit in the Flow subreddit say that the pillars looked like, what's called the Pillars of Creation, which is a space, like, gas
yeah,
cloud.
It's a celestial formation.
It's a celestial formation.
Interesting. I thought it looked like the Disney castle. Which, in animation, you don't know if that's meant to be some sort of metaphor. But, it could be... You know, transcendence is a metaphor for a lot of things. I really get the sense that part of it is just really putting you from the perspective of this cat is just like in life, sometimes things happen and you just don't understand. Like everything that happened is really outside the control of these animals and they're really just going with the flow. Someone
suggested that maybe when they got to the top of the pillar, they made a wish. The cat wished for the water to go away and the bird wished to go back to the sky.
Oh, that's...
Did we watch a post-credit scene?
Yes, we did. We talked about it. You were not there. You did not see it, but it was so simple I just told you what it was.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
But I can show it to you if you want. That'll be way more relevant in a moment.
I'm going to use the bathroom.
But you know, that post-credit scene might tie into that wish theory. That is interesting.
Which... Then they go on to say that maybe the cat wished for the water to come back just a little bit because of the ending.
Yeah. Not completely. Make of that as you will. The waters recede. Our characters are put back on land. A character that we briefly discussed, but we kind of overlooked his most important moment. The whale saves the cat. The cat is drowning and the whale and his only very few appearances raises him up so that he can breathe. So then once the water is receded, the whale is actually left on land and is dying. I'm skipping over...
Well, he followed them basically the whole way.
Yeah. I'm actually skipping over a really important sequence, which is actually the climax of the movie, which is after the water recedes, the boat, the cat is safe, the lemur is safe.
Friends.
But the boat with the rest of the animals is stuck in a tree.
And the thing about when the water recedes, it doesn't automatically go back to normal. There are huge, massive canyons that have just been eroded away by the actual, like, metric tons of water. So the landscape is forever changed. Uh-huh. And this isn't like a new river bottom. These canyons are stretching down hundreds of feet. Like, if you fall, you will not get out.
The boat is hanging over one of these ravines. Mm-hmm. And it falls just enough that the dogs are able to get up, but the capybara, what I would say is set up to be the most lovable character by everyone, is stuck in the boat. So the animals work together to save the capybara. It's pretty tense. I mean, like, no one in this movie has died so far, but the bird did get freaking raptured right in front of us. So you just never know what's going to happen. And they do manage to get the capybara off safely. And it's a very triumphant moment.
Mm-hmm.
But then they find the whale dead or dying on land.
Heavy breathing.
And it's very sad. And our remaining four, cat, dog, lemur, capybara, kind of just take a moment. They sit down. They look at their own reflections in the water. It's a very nice moment. And mm-hmm. the movie just ends there. But there is an after credit scene. So the move as the credits are closing, the camera slowly pans up out of the water to the point that the camera is at just at water level with the sunset, and you see the whale in the distance,
mm-hmm.
which logically doesn't make any sense for the whale to have somehow gotten back in the ocean. So there's a couple of different possible interpretations of this. One is that the floods came back again. Because they're just in a cycle of up and down, which is very terrifying for everyone else. It's good for the whale, bad for everyone else. I like this wish theory a lot, just mm-hmm. because it really explains that it really helps bring everything around together. Yeah, I mean, those are the two main paths I see as of right now.
Someone's theory says that they think, I'm going to read some of their key points because this is interesting. Instead of a spiritual aspect, they're viewing it as a science fiction aspect. They, here are some of their reasons. They think something catastrophic happened on a scale larger than just the planet because there's so many abnormal auroras.
Interesting.
Props to Plane Dimension 2928 if you're listening. Thank you for your post 115 days ago in the r/movie subthread for Flo. There were no people and no corpses. So people, they think people left or were taken. And the owner of a cat can't just leave without him. He loved the cat, obviously. Valid. If I have to go, then he's going with me. the other thing, it's our world, but not our time. And they think it's far away in the future where people can build a beautiful city with influence of ancient architecture. Like that city they floated through next to the pillars. It has Roman architecture.
I forgot that they did go through a big
but,
city. Yeah.
But it's not built in Rome. It definitely wasn't built in Roman times. Sure. It was, and they said, on the other hand, if somebody, there's also a simple house as well. There's a wide range of architecture that's both kind of almost modern and ancient. And they said, they suggest the pillars were created by humans as a very developed civilization, and they were tall for a reason, to be above the water level when the flood comes. Ultimately, this builds their theory that I think some catastrophe happened to them with the solar system and humanity left the planet, and that the pillars are points of exit to somewhere else. Which is
a teleportation.
Mm-hmm.
Device.
Mm-hmm. So somehow the sculptor left the cat behind. Maybe he didn't have time, or maybe it's not possible for a cat to pass through. Somehow the bird could do it, but the cat was returned back. Bias.
If you're gonna make a teleportation device to another world, make it so cats can come.
Yep.
How hard is it?
If I can't go with my cat, we're just gonna stay in the tower.
See, it requires that you have a soul to pass through. Yeah. That if that were the point of this movie, that'd be very sad.
I did happen to think, because I knew there was a flood scene at the beginning, a friend of mine had warned me, and if you don't know about it, it can kind of be jarring because you're like, this is really kind of sad to watch, which is why when we watched it together, I kind of went, do you guys know what happens in this film? And he said no, because I knew it was going to freak Allison out. She kept looking at me because I was aware, and I'm like, I can't tell you. Props to all the people who posted in this over 100 days ago, because they're like, no one else has seen this film. Everyone needs to watch it. Props to y'all. It's won an Oscar.
Yeah, really. What are your general thoughts on the movie?
I enjoyed it. Mm. I don't know if it'll probably be my favorite film of the year. Yeah. It was fun. I love it more for the fact of that it beat out all these massive animation companies. I love that. I love that this is a very loved passion project. For the creators, like, props to them for spending 5.5 years to do this. Obviously, it worked out well. Still stand by the fact that I think Wild Robot should have had narration and not speaking, but it's based off a book with speaking, so that's, like, kind of part of the point.
Yeah. But, oh, man. Yeah, you're making me realize you smashed this movie and Wild Robot together. And you've got something incredible.
Yeah. So almost kind of very similar, but I think this also shows that show don't tell is still very important in films.
Absolutely. So. Yeah, especially on an international level. I guess I'll start with my negative first because I like the movie overall, so I want to end on a positive note. My issues with the movie, one, there are certainly times when the animation still feels very janky. I appreciate the kind of mid style they were going for between, it was not super high resolution, but it was still detailed in 3D animated. I appreciate what they were going for. There are times where they feel like stock assets from a video game. You see like an NPC. They feel very NPC. They don't feel like, there are times where animals don't feel like they have a lot of personality or life in the way they move. They feel very just basic walk cycle. There are times where the lighting on the animal doesn't really match the lighting of the environment, which can be a cool aesthetic choice, but it feels like more of a mistake to me. I think the biggest issue is with the cat. The cat would look like different colors because he'd be like too bright for the environment. Like obviously if you have a character with hair in a very bright environment, they're gonna look different, but he would not be in that bright of an environment, but he'd be like almost white. It would, like, there were times where I legitimately thought he was a different cat because he looked like a different color. And there is just, so I don't want to bash this like small animation. I think there are times it looks so beautiful. The water looks great, which is hard to do.
The dog eyes are really weird.
Yeah.
The dog eyes just, I don't know if it's the placement in the head or if it's the way the texture's rendered. The dog eyes, specifically in the golden retriever in some shots, are kind of like, ooh.
So, I mean, I respect the heck out of this movie. It's just as I'm watching it, as someone who really loves animation, it's not like I could do better. It's not like I know how to like suggest. It just seems like, you know, if something's in the distance, if something is in the great quantity, like I have no problem with like there was a couple of moments with like a herd of deer. I had no problem with the way they moved, the way they acted, because there's a lot of them and you're not looking directly at them. But when you have your main characters and you're looking at them, and it just brings you out of the story, honestly, it just really, they're them being a little bit lifeless at times, them being, yeah, just, I would say a little bit lifeless at moments and just not as fluid as they could be. I guess like, you know, when you contrast it with something like Wild Robot, The Boy and the Heron, where there's just so much personality in it. And overall, I guess because it's such a simple movie, there's not a lot to just like love. Like, I don't think it, like for me, it's probably like a 6.5, 7 out of 10.
Yeah, that's what I'd probably say.
Which is like not, which is very positive, but it's also like, there's not anything in here that I really want to go back and see again. Now, I did say, I think it is cool that like the weird transcendent religious moment does make you rethink the whole movie. Not a lot of movies do that.
For sure.
I give it credit for that, for just kind of throwing a curveball in there. But I think if you rewatch the film, it still wouldn't be that rewarding. It's not like, I don't feel like there's like little clues to what's going on, or there's like, oh, this character's motivation or what this character's doing makes totally different sense. It's just like, you just kind of be questioning, how can I figure this out? And really, you don't have a lot to go
on. It's not a traditional Western narrative.
Oh, not at all. And I respect that.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't saying you weren't.
I appreciate that you're kind of along for the ride. I love, you know, I would say, if anything, I think the most positive element of this movie for me is that it was fun to watch with a group.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no dialogue, you can very easily chat during it and like make observations. So I think, if anything, it's really fun to watch with other people, which I think is a big win for any movie.
There's a lot of Wild Robot and Flow discourse in this subreddit.
Interesting.
Someone has said, Wild Robot is a pizza from Domino's. Flow is a cofe. It's COFEE. Made by old Turkish man in tiny basement cafe in Thessaloniki.
But yeah, positives. I think my big positive is that it's fun to watch with a group. It's fun to kind of discuss what you think is happening, because the movie's not always, it's hard to know at any given moment what is going to happen, because character, like in a Western movie, and when we say Western, we mean like Western society, in an American movie specifically, a character is probably, especially animated American films, it's probably a character saying what's happening. So you're never like fully certain. Is what is this character's motivation? What, are they good? Are they bad? What's going to happen? Is what's happening right now going to be important later? Is this a setup? Is this a one-off scene? It's hard to know. Are these characters going to come back? Are they not? So I think it is a somewhat unpredictable film in that sense. Ultimately, very simple, other than one scene. Pulls you in by the end. I think it ends very strong. I like it. It would not have been my best animated movie of the year. I probably would have put Kung Fu Panda 4 and Inside Out 2 above this for sure.
Yeah.
Just because those are really, really good animated movies. I'm trying to think if there's any other. I'm trying to bring up my list for the year. And so my list of 2024 films, I thought that I updated it. 24. I may have accidentally put it in 2014, maybe. Or maybe I didn't update it. Let's see. I would say, man, it really is whether I like it more or less than Wild Robot is the question. That's hard.
Because
I would say overall it's a better movie than Wild Robot. Because I really didn't, as Wild Robot went on, I liked it less and less. But the beginning of Wild Robot's really strong. I think I would, okay, which would I rather rewatch? That's hard. I don't really want to rewatch either that much.
I would probably put Flow on for background.
Fair, fair. I think I feel like Wild Robot has more in it that I may have missed than Flow. I appreciate Flow's simplicity, but ultimately, I feel like there's not a lot that would reward a rewatch. And I think there are some films I love for the atmosphere. I don't think the atmosphere is strong enough to like just want to sit in it. Wild Robot, while I don't super love it, I do feel like there's probably things in it that I missed. And so I think I would put it just below Wild Robot, but it beat out Deadpool and Wolverine, Horizon, American Saga, and Twisters. But that does mean it is dead last for animated films I saw last year.
I'd probably put it above Wild Robot for me.
Oh, Transformers 1 is also above.
Oh, yeah. Rest in peace, Transformers 1.
But you know what? That is a pretty strong year for animated films. I have not seen the two stop-motion films that were nominated for Best Animated Film.
We need to watch Memoir of a Snail.
Memoir of a Snail and Waltz and Gromit. I really want to see. Just have not got around to it. So who knows about those?
Please, 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 please. We have to watch those after. That's like our September.
Yeah, yeah, I think so.
That's like our 4 weeks of Andor Strait and then Jurassic Park and Jurassic World. And then maybe we take like a 2 week break.
Sure.
And then we hit back in with Memoir of a Snail.
Couple fun facts. All the animal sounds were real. And
that's what Athena does in her side gig when she's not editing.
She's an animated animal voice actor.
Yep.
They got real capybara sounds, but they did not sound like the personality they were going for, so they used a baby camel instead.
I heard that, yeah.
It's fun. The sound designer tried to use his own cat, a female orange cat named Miut, M-I-U-T. However, as soon as he? I don't know. The name is...
You said female orange cat, didn't you?
No, no. The sound designer. As soon as the sound designer pulled out their microphone, the cat went mute for 2 months, at least around the microphone. And it wasn't
until they
found a different, older microphone and pulled it out. They were able to get it all in like one sitting, it sounds
That's
like.
That's so odd.
Dude, cats are smart, man. They know, pretty much they know what you want and they know they don't want to give it to you.
Athena does this thing where I will see her, I'll be watching TikTok or a video, and I will see her doing something cute, and I have to switch into my phone app, which stops the noise, and she stops.
Yep, yep. This is the first independent film to win Best Animated Movie, which is very cool. Yeah. So, that's all I got.
That's all I got.
Meme Minute.
I got
But
four.
It's longer than it takes a bird to transcend into the sky for inexplicable reasons. I think I've got like two memes and maybe even a video. I think I got a video. Do you have any videos?
No, I got four images though.
Let me. That sounded like a video.
No. That was not from my phone.
Oh, was that from my phone?
I'm pretty sure it was your phone.
Interesting. I didn't. Crazy. Anyways.
Crazy. That's crazy ones.
Yeah, great.
I'm trying to find my saved video. Here we go. Meme minute.
And the rats may be crazy.
Oh, I have it saved on the Rebels and Robots account, not my personal one. Dang it. Just give me a second here. Rebels and Robots Pod on Instagram. Give us a follow.
Shout out.
This unnecessary podcast break brought to you by our Instagram. We're going to do self-promotion. And saved. I was not... Man, this app is running so slow. It's crazy. Meme formats. No, not meme formats. Meme minute. Here we go. Restaurant opens at 8 or at 9 a.m. Old people at 8:28.
I almost sent that to you.
So it's the like dark.
I almost saved this to show on the podcast, but then I thought Cameron's going to think this is dumb.
I think it's great. It's, do you remember what they're called? They're like the dark robots like they made in Mandalorian.
Dark troopers.
Yeah, they're like dark trooper robot. Stormtrooper things that they made in Mandalorian season 2, and they get activated, but the door is closed, and so they're just banging on the door. It's so good. As someone who's worked retail for his first couple jobs, this is too real.
I also worked retail in a very specific kind of retail, and it sucked. Uh-huh.
How many memes you got?
I got 4 images.
Show me 2. Everyone is so mean to me. Heartbreaking emoji. It's just that it's like dramatic shot of Godzilla from, I think it's one of the posters.
From the 2014 movie.
That's good. I like
where
it.
You see the soldiers in front. It's just, it's good. It's funny. Detroit when it becomes human. I don't know. Never played the game.
So there's a video game called Detroit Become Human.
I like the emphasis on Detroit.
Yeah.
Not Detroit. And it's a picture of Metroplex. From Transformers, who is a living city. So it's good.
Okay, let's see what we got here. Find someone who looks at you the way Anakin Skywalker looks at Asajj Ventress. But it's just a photo. It's like a red carpet photo of Hayden Christensen with Natalie Portman, but she's bald. I'm guessing it was probably around the time that she shot V for Vendetta, where she had to shave her head. It's good. It's good.
Godzilla's theme starts playing versus Godzilla's theme starts playing. And you have a Happy Wojak with God on the side with one Godzilla theme.
Oh, it depends on the movie.
Depends on the movie. You've got Godzilla 2014. You got old Godzilla. You got Zilla. And then you have withered, crying Wojak with Shin Godzilla.
Yeah, I mean,
Godzilla minus
it's
one.
Like more upbeat or downbeat, it certainly makes a difference.
Look, the track Divine from Godzilla minus one stays on my playlist. It's so good.
Well, that means we got to play it, but I'm going to talk over it so we don't get copyright struck on YouTube.
Well, first of all, I can bang. Who can find it faster?
Wait, which one was...
it's called
Shin?
Divine.
Is it Shin or
no,
Godzilla Minus One?
I said Divine from Godzilla Minus One.
I just couldn't remember which movie you said because I was expecting Minus One. But...
This is very specifically the scene where... He starts powering up for the first atomic blast.
Oh, shoot.
This is
That's such a good scene.
Is,
oh,
like,
my gosh.
It's just...
Ooh, man, what a good movie. I look forward to rewatching it. At some point, I want to rewatch it this summer with Allison.
I own it on DVD.
So my next two things aren't memes as much as they are just like internet posts. Obligatory, not a meme. Have you ever seen... Okay, so everyone knows there's a very short, very brief sequence in The New Hope where... Yes, we do talk about Star Wars on this podcast. In New Hope where...
Shocker!
Luke sells his speeder. Have you ever seen what the alien looks like?
I don't know.
What is the term? Oh, dang it. I'm going to forget what it
low
is.
Low resolution?
No, it's, is it lo-fi horror? or analog horror. It's an analog horror jump scare, this image. He is terrifying.
His mouth looks like those memes when kids cough and they're like,
yeah, the cat. He has four eyes, but they're all looking different directions and are different parts of his face. His face is like a big piece of lettuce.
Typically inaccurate.
But he has weird, like, antennae. His mouth is a jumble of, like, roast beef. I hate looking at him, Rachel. I hate looking at him. I hate
that you made me look at him.
You're welcome. Oh, also this caption on the image. George Lucas came in with a drawing of a multi-eyed blob that he'd done while sitting in the airport. And yeah, we built it and we all hated it.
Have you seen those things where it's like a toy company and they're like, we made toys of kids' drawings. It's that.
Yes, exactly. What's your next meme?
It's my last one. Chad Jurassic Park 3 Spino versus Soy Jurassic World Rebirth Spino. And this is a joke within the Jurassic World fandom and also just the paleontology fandom, specifically Spinosaur fandom. As in, it seems like every new discovery regarding the Spinosaurus, like, and what they're probably actually like, just absolutely makes them so much way less cool. That's the joke, that the Spinosaurus from Jurassic Park 3 is way cooler than the ones in the new movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Karen says, sure. Okay. He said, all right.
Really debating whether I should say this comment or not. I probably shouldn't if I'm debating it, but Allison, my wife, I really hope her friend doesn't listen to this podcast. I might get in trouble. My wife doesn't listen to this podcast. I hope not. She had a friend that she said she wanted to go see the new Jurassic World movie with because she is, quote, a dinosaur autistic.
I had a feeling as soon as you said, I don't know if I should. I was like, this is a dinosaur autism joke. I knew it immediately. My brain went, he's gonna make a dinosaur.
Well, we've already broken through this mold, so I might as well say it again. Speaking of autists, I stumbled upon a Facebook group called like Star Wars like spaceships or something. Spaceship. And this person said, hi, first time poster, thought you might be able to help identify the two circled ships from the Rebel fleet escaping the destruction of the second Death Star. So it's a wide shot of all the ships, and he circled two kind of small ships that are pretty hard to identify. I think this is a very legitimate question if you're interested in Star Wars ships. Someone commented, sounds like something an agent of the Empire would ask.
It's like, are you a Fed?
Yeah. Side note, my other favorite comment, I didn't screenshot it. Someone commented, what does it matter? This is on a Facebook group called Star Wars Spaceships. And the answer was great. He said something like he was trying to catalog all of the ships in the battle and trying to create like a diagram of the battle or something. It was great. Mm-hmm. I loved it. It was a good answer. That's all my memes. Thanks for joining us. This was fun. The last light episode before we have to talk about three episodes of Andor per podcast.
Yay!
For a month.
Dense.
Dense. That is how I would describe the people working at Disney.
Dense.
Who create the release schedule.
Yeah, okay.
As always, thank you so much, Caleb Jacoby, for creating our beautiful intro outro music. Oh, you did?
I did. I yelled at him from like 50 feet away. We waved at each other and he went on his way.
I would just whisper loudly at him. Rebels. Robots.
Oh, no.
Or just da-da-da, da-da-da, da-da-da. I don't know if he would get that joke.
I don't think he'd get that joke.
Props, Rachel, for our artwork.
Artwork.
I almost said outro music.
Thank you. You're welcome.
And the Twitter account.
Props to Cameron for our Instagram and our Facebook and for running the RSS site when he remembers.
When I feel like it.
Whatever you want, you know.
Thanks to our guest on the pod, Athena, for coming on and talking about cat representation. Do you think that Athena maybe thought that this cat had unfair body image problems. Are you calling her fat? I'm not saying Athena is fat. I'm saying, is this cat too thin? Is it creating...
Cat has pretty privilege.
Yeah, why do they never cast cats of bigger body types?
Oh my gosh.
Give us something to read on
the
pod.
You're so insufferable.
Man, this is a cancel-worthy conclusion that we're having here. Give us something to read on the pod. Leave a review, tweet, or DM us memes or opinions. Let us know. Have you ever just, got caught in a big flood and climbed the top of God's middle finger and gotten raptured? And let us know. Let us know what you think. Have you ever found your whale friend dead?
Spat you back out.
Yeah.
Half raptured.
And also, remember to start it off with, this is Cameron and Rachel signing off.
This is Cameron and Rachel signing off, saying, if you're a dinosaur autist, please tell us facts in the reviews.
Good night,
Let's
everyone.
Go with yours.
What was that?
Let's go with yours.
I think we should go with yours.
No.
I can't be the only one saying cancel-worthy things on this episode.
I don't want her to throw up.
That little waddle trying to escape. That picked up really well on the mic, and she was like 6 feet away from the microphone. She projects. This is Cameron and Rachel. Hang on.